connected. I was speaking more in terms of the concern of Ritzicha, that sometimes with automated cars they might cause people to die, and I was trying to figure out how to get from Nezikin to Ritzicha, but I figured out a way. So what I'm speaking about today is Hezek or Ritzicha Derech Hatzalah. If damages are caused or a murder is committed, but it's done Derech Hatzalah, is that considered to be a mitigating consideration in terms of the Yisav Ehetah B'Davar, in terms of the Chiyuv Tashlumin B'Davar? So it's very difficult to launch into any discussion of this sort without just laying the foundation. Obviously, you've laid the foundation many times, I'm sure, over the course of the year, since you're learning Bava Kam, you're learning the second parak in particular, and you're familiar with the whole discussion about Ademuad Li'olam, whether it applies across the board, whether there's a pitur in the case of Onis Gamor, Machlokes Tosos and Ramban. But even that foundational discussion relates to this shiur as well, so I'm just going to touch upon it in the context of our presentation. So very often people, when they speak about Nezikins, they start with the discussion of what's the makor of the Isser to be Mazik, since there's no explicit pasuk in the Torah. We know that there are many different sources, but the truth of the matter is, as you've probably already heard from Rabbi Rosenzweig, I apologize if I'm repeating anything, it's really a complex question. It's like the question of when did you stop beating your wife? So it presupposes that there's an Isser Mazik. It's not necessarily Muskam, there's an Isser Mazik. It's a Shitas Mabit, I think, that says that there might not be an Isser Mazik. It might just be a Chiyuv Tashlumin, that you have an obligation to pay in the event that you are Mazik. It evokes for me a famous law review article that was written by Guido Calabresi, who was the dean of Yale Law School when I attended there. He's now a judge of the Second Circuit on the Court of Appeals, which is like the second highest type of court appointment after the Supreme Court. There was discussion about appointing him to the Supreme Court. He never quite made it. Maybe he was a little bit too liberal. But he wrote an article that put him on the map together with A. Douglas Melamed. And I don't know why the article was called this, but it was called The View from the Cathedral. I have no idea why it was called The View from the Cathedral. But it set forth that there are two types of liability rules, so that there are what we call property, what they called. They called property rules and liability rules. Property rules establish a certain absolute rights. You have an absolute right to do something. And liability rules establish the other type of property rule is where it's absolutely prohibited to do something. That would be a property rule, where there's a rule that there are certain things that you can do and certain things that you can't do. That would be like an Isser. But then there are liability rules. Liability rules could be you're permitted to do something, but in the event that it causes damage, then you're going to have to pay for the damage. Like we have in Baba Basra, you can keep your oven a certain certain distance from the roof. It's permissible, but in the event that it causes damage, then you're going to be liable for the damage. So there is this type of concept as well, even in the secular law context. And it is perhaps against this backdrop that we can understand on some level maybe one way of even being masbir, this basic machlokis that exists between the Tosos and the Ramban, between those who say that there is a liability adam mu'ad li'olam no matter what, and those who say, no, it depends on there being a certain measure of fault. That the Ramban, who says that there's liability across the board, that there's never an exemption, might be of the opinion that really the focus with respect to Hilchos Nezikin is on there being an insurance policy, that everybody is providing insurance in the event that there's going to be harm that is caused by them. They're going to pay for it, what we might call no-fault liability, no-fault insurance, where it doesn't matter whether there's fault or there isn't fault, you're going to pay for it no matter what. That's why, for example, the one time you could be off the hook is if the other party was poshea, like the Ramban says, somebody put an object while you were sleeping, so you have the right to be off the hook because that person should have known that you're sleeping, that you might have twisted and you might twist and turn in your sleep and knock the object over, so that person was the poshea, so that's why you're off the hook. But otherwise, it's not based on fault, it's based on there being sort of a no-fault liability unless it's pshia from somebody else. Or you could say, like Tosfos, that no, that there is some sort of, we assume that there's something that you did wrong, there's an Isser component, and if we're able to find a situation in which you are mamish, an onus gomor, in which there is absolutely no type of fault that is coming from the mazik, so then the mazik is going to be off the hook. And it seems that this is an approach that is consistent with what we find in a lot of the poskim. Even the Rambam Shita is controversial, whether the Rambam holds that Onis Gomer is Pater or not, but the whole Rambam that speaks about how all of the principles of Onis Gomer are only applicable B'Shus HaNizek, but once it's a place where Shneim Yesh Lehem B'Shus or Shneim Ein Lehem B'Shus, so then there's only going to be liability in the event that there's Kavanah, but in the event that there's no Kavanah, there won't be liability. So I don't know if you took a look, the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Shin Ayin Ches Sif Yud Aleph just lays it out very straight and says this is not an absolute principle, especially if you look at the Rambam and you figure out the application. The idea of Adam Mu'ad Li'olam is not across the board. It's specifically a Rishus HaNizek type of a principle, and that's why, because in the Rishus HaNizek, there's a higher level of care that you're supposed to exercise. However, once you're in any other type of setting, so then for sure there is a higher standard, a higher threshold, in order to allocate responsibility to somebody. And it's also substantiated a little bit in the discussion in the Chazon Ish. Again, I'm sure you've already examined this and scrutinized it. The Chazon Ish in Siman Daled in Baba Kama, where he talks about, so he also mentions the Rambam, and he speaks about the foundation of Hilchos Nezikin being, in terms of when there's a Chiyuv Tashlumin and when there's not, being what we might call the reasonable person standard of if an Adam is Noe Kimin Hago Shalolam, person is just carrying on the way that they normally would. They have a right to walk in the street, and perhaps if some damage occurs and they didn't do anything, which was Mishuna, for example, so then we're not going to hold somebody liable in such a case, that there has to be some level of fault, some culpability in order to assign liability. However you understand the Shita of the Rambam, however you understand the Shita of the Mechaber, whether there really is Machlokes Mechaber. I don't know if anyone did an extensive survey or analysis ever. It could be a doctoral dissertation. Somebody wants to get a degree from Revel, I don't know. In terms of when the Ramah is disagreeing with the Mechaber and when he's not, whether there's any significance if he starts with the word Hagah, doesn't start with the word Hagah. But in this context, I don't think the word Hagah exists in the comment of the Rama on the Mechaber. And some say that when the Rama adds there, of course you're off the hook with the known as Gomer. He's not disagreeing with the Mechaber. He's explaining the Mechaber. Of course, the Mechaber says in the very next sip that if somebody happens to slip from a ladder that didn't look like it was broken and causes damage, so they're not responsible. So of course the Mechaber also holds that a person is going to be putter in a case of onus gomer. But whether you understand the Mechaber that way, not everyone understood that. There are many who understood there's a machlokes mechaber Rama. However you understand the Rambam, it doesn't really matter. We're Ashkenazim here at YU, for the most part. I don't know, the Kol Elyon. We have Sephardim in the Kol. We should have Sephardim. Okay, good. We have Ike, of course. We have Ike. Okay, we have a couple of Sephardim. We should have probably more Sephardim in the Kol. Okay, we have a few. Okay, good. It's growing. It's growing in population. Baruch Hashem. Rabbi Tassone is doing a good job with Dr. Dobrinsky and company. Okay, very good. So, but most of us here at YU, it's mostly an Ashkenazic institution, so we generally assume that we are paskin like the Ramah. So the Ramah says that somebody's going to be off the hook in the case of an onus gomer, which fits in within this analysis. So if that's the case, so then we need to understand a little bit what is the nature of the yisur. We can go back to our complex question that we started with, and it's legitimate to answer that question. So there are many different shitos, and you've probably discussed the shitos, Gzela, Baltashkis, Hashavas Aveda, famous essay by the Stipler, etc., etc. So I brought in my sources in the for the Chabura today, I brought in source base the Chassam Sofer. So I think the Chassam Sofer is consistent with Rav Soloveitchik's explanation, where he says that the basic source for the Chiyuv of Tashlumin when it comes to Nezikin, or for the Yisr, the basic source for the Yisr, he mentions Shmati, Vishmati, Malanav Shasekim, then he mentions Lo Saman Al Dam Yecha, that it's based on the idea of Lo Saman Al Dam Yecha, that if you're not supposed to allow for damage to occur to your fellow without intervening, whether it's damage to the person's goof or whether it's damage to the person's mamon. So then, for sure, you have an affirmative obligation not to cause the damage in the first place. So if that's the case, that's a good introduction to the subject of the shir, which is that when you have an act of hatsala that happens incidentally to cause nezek, we could understand, certainly based on the Chasam Sofer's framework of the Isser of Mazik and the Chiv of Tashlumin of Mazik, why there might be more wiggle room if the whole Isser is premised upon Lo Samot El Damriecha in the first place. So if you are doing something which is itself gufa, fulfillment of Lo Samot El Damriecha, you're engaged in a Maisa Hatzalah, so there's much more of a svara to say that the person would be allowed to do it, and that the person might even be off the hook in certain cases for committing the act of hezek. There might be. We might say he's permitted to do it, but maybe because of some tikkun olam considerations, he's going to be chayiv anyway. We have to figure it out. So the Shach asks an important question. This is really the very beginning of Hilchos Nezikin, the Shach and Simon Shinai in Ches. He refers to, he says, take a look in Shin Pei Vav. Not sure. It's too long for me to read. But he says that that's the siman about Garmi. So he says, but this relates really to Siman Shin Pei. That's what he says also in his comment. He says, I don't understand. If you're really going to be off the hook for Onis Gomor, which is what the Rama says, and maybe that's what the Machaba holds as well, so why then in Siman Shin Pei do we say that if I have a nirdaf, for example, who breaks Kalim in order to save himself, Rodev is running after him, and he shover is a Kalim, so we say that he's chayav to pay. So no, that's the sugya in Baba Kama later on. Dav Samach HaMibes, Davin HaMelech asked a question. He was hiding out in the fields somewhere, and he sent a delegation to the Sanhedrin to find out the answer to the question. Could he burn the wheat fields in order to carve a path for escape? Are you allowed to be matzil zatzmo b'mamon chavero or not? And the answer was, no, you're not allowed to be matzil zatzmo b'mamon chavero, which means, at the very least, it means that if you're matzil zatzmo b'mamon chavero, then you're obligated to pay. So the Shach asked the question, I don't understand, but in such a case where the person has to destroy the neighbor's property in order to save their life, so isn't that an onus gomer situation? Shouldn't the person be off the hook? So the Shach explains, no, it's different in that case because misha mazik b'miskaven afilu onus gomer chayev. Even if you hold that onus gomer is chayev, if you commit an act of hezek in a fashion of miskaven, that you do it intentionally, you know what you're doing, and you do it intentionally, despite the fact that you need to do it in order to save your life, so then you're going to be chayiv. Yes? Right.
Only the nazikin, that's not an amanis. But you can't be only the nazikin that a person who's smashing it just to jump out a window is smashing a window. That only the nazikin, that's a very clear is that a possible way to answer or disagree with the Shach?
Disagree with the Shach to say that this isn't...
The onus gomer is only punter when, from everybody's perspective, they view the situation as not a mazik because they didn't see that this shmir would...
I think that's essentially what the Shach is saying, and just in different words. I think that's you can interpret the Shach that way. I don't think there's such a meaningful distinction interpreting the Shach that way. So there's actually a machlokis in the interpretation of the sugya there in Daf Samach Amud Beis between Rashi and Tosfos, a strange, puzzling Rashi, where Rashi seems to say that the real question was, is it mutter or asar? And the answer was, it's asar, that a person would have to rather let themselves die rather than to destroy somebody else's property. And Tosfos says, no, of course, that's not the question. Tosfos says the question obviously is whether there's a chiyuv to be mishali mamon, to reimburse for the damages. What could be a svara behind Rashi's shita? So there's a discussion. The poskim discuss how well there appears to be a shita's tanayim like this, right? At least according to one amora, Rabbi Meir and Yiksuvas Daf Yutes, who says that if Edom signed on a shtar and they said it's a forgery, we were forced to sign based on onus nefashos that we were going to be killed anyway. So they're not believed because Edom Damesim Masatzmo Rasha, because they should have signed anyway. And Rafista, that's what Rafista interprets Rabbi Meir's Shita. And Rava says that's not why Rabbi Meir says that the Edom aren't believed. This is a case where the logo is Moda Shiksovo, and Moda Shiksovo in Sarak Lakaimo. That's the whole situation. That's what he's talking about. But of course, that the only things that would stand, would override Pikuach Nefesh considerations are the three major cardinal sins, Shvikus Damim, Giloy Arayos, and Avodah Zarah. So therefore, that can't possibly be. And they quote this, Brisa Chitzonis. I don't know whoever looks at the Brisa Chitzonis, if there's a book that collects all the Brisa Chitzonis. It's a Brisa Chitzonis that says, there's a machlokis that Chachamim, most Chachamim say that there are Gimel Averis, a Yerek V'Yabor, and Rabbi Meir adds a fourth one. He says, Gezel as well, you're going to cause theft, so that's also Yerek V'Yabor. But the Pashtus is not that way. And there's also a Gemara and Yuma, Daf Pei Gimel Amid Beis, that talks about how Rabbi Yehuda was also Bulmus, and that he needed to eat something very urgently, so he tackled a shepherd and took some bread from him so he'd be able to eat the bread. It seems like that was an appropriate thing to do. So what does Rashi do with that sugya? On the other hand, there's the sugya, I think I quoted it over here, that speaks about how there was a chassid who needed to be fed. This is Baba Kama Pei Amin Aleph, and he had some heart problems in the rope. Instead, you have to drink hot milk straight, from the goat. So even though goats cause gezel, nonetheless, he took a goat, and the Chachamim said, this was a terrible thing that he did. So why was it, that's why he ended up, and he says that when he died, he said, this is the one sin that I committed, that I was over al divrei chaverei, that I took in a goat. And according to the way that the Ramban and others understand the sugya, he was mamish b'sakana. He was mamish b'sakana. And despite the fact that he was mamish b'sakana, it seems like this wasn't considered to be a good thing. So they talk about, the Ramban himself says, maybe you don't have to give yourself up to be killed, but it's considered to be a midas chasidus. It's considered to be a midas chasidus to do so. And Rabbi Meir was saying that the Edom were rishayim in a way because they should have done, they should have fulfilled the midas chasidus. And for this chassid, so since he was a chassid, so for sure he should have fulfilled the mitzvah chassidus. But most poskim say this doesn't make any sense. That's what Rabbi Chana Wasserman says here. I have in source tesba, Baba Kama Os Peches. He says, "V'teima debada yisu gezel hutam amakom sakana." Obviously, stealing, causing damage, all of these different things are going to be muta b'makom sakana. So you have to answer, give other explanations that maybe this chassid didn't have to do it. Maybe there were other ways that he could have potentially been cured. There is a shita in Achronim that holds this away, or that whatever, it's not possible to pay up, since the idea is that it's asal asal asa es asma b'maman chaverim, b'maman chavero, that what that means at the end of the day, even according to Tosfos, is that you can do it, but you have to reimburse the person. So some say, okay, so if there would be no possibility of reimbursement, so then you would you would not be allowed to save your life by damaging somebody else's crops. That's also very, very difficult to say. We wouldn't assume that way, but the Binyan Sion assumes that way. It's the famous Binyan Sion. This is very relevant to Halacha L'maaseh. That's the whole discussion of autopsies that or organ donation. Somebody died. He didn't sign out an organ donor. He didn't fill out a Hutz card. So he didn't fill out an organ donation card saying that upon his death you could take his organs to save somebody else. Even not the brain and the heart and the lung and the liver. Even if you would assume that you need the real cardiac respiratory death and not brain death, he didn't want to even allow his kidneys to be taken, even if it could be harvested after he has cardiorespiratory death, let's assume. So he said he didn't ever fill out such a card. Now the person dies, and we know that if we take out his kidney, we'll be able to save somebody else's life. That no, the Yehuda looks himself as safe. Yabachol in front of us. So So even though normally you can't be menabel the mace and so forth, nonetheless, of course, in this situation, it'll be permitted. And the Binyan Siyan says no, since in this situation you would be matzil as asma, you're going to be matzil this person with mamon chavero. With somebody else's money, and you won't be able to reimburse the person. Why won't you be able to reimburse the person? Because he's dead. You can't reimburse the person if he's already dead. So therefore, the Binyan Siyan says, so therefore you have no right to do it, unless the person actually gave a shus. The person didn't give a shus beforehand, so then you're not going to be allowed to do it. That's a very outlying shita. We don't assume that way, lahalacha, but because there is such a shita, so therefore we say, if a person really wants to make sure that halakhically speaking, they'll be able to harvest their organs after death, so they shouldn't rely on there being the possibility of a chole b'faneno. They should say explicitly that this is something that they want, because otherwise maybe we have to be koshesh for the shita of the binyan siyon. How do you answer the question with respect to Rashi from the case of Yuma, of Rabbi Yehuda, and she'akso bomas? So some answer based on the shita mekubetzit. I have here the Shita Mekubetzit, source Yud Beis, who says that this obligation to be a matzil, that you have to, that you have, that a person has to save somebody else. He says, how can we override how can we say that it would be prohibited to be matzil as atzmo the mamon chaveva, when even your chaver has an obligation of lo saman al damri echa? So he says, no, Yechaver doesn't necessarily have an obligation of lo saman al damri echa unless he's actually standing there and watching your situation. But if somebody is dying in Mexico, so a person in the United States doesn't have an obligation, especially if there's a wall, doesn't have an obligation of lo saman al damri echa because the person is not in front of him. So in the case of Yuma, so the Roeh, the shepherd, was right in front of Rabbi Yehuda when Rabbi Yehuda was convulsing because he was also bumis. So the Roeh had an obligation based on Los Amon Adamiyaka to rescue him. So therefore, he was allowed to take his money in order to save himself. But normally, like in the case where it's somebody else's wheat field, you want to burn down the field in order to save yourself, to carve out a path. So then there wouldn't be a right automatically, intrinsically, under those circumstances. But be it as it may, everybody agrees that in a case of where a person is matzil sasmo b'mamon chavero, even assuming the way we paskin, that it's always mutter to do, whether the person is befanav, whether the person whose mamon you're destroying is not befanav, you always have the right to destroy the person's property in order to save your own life. However, you are obligated to reimburse the person. So this is all codified in the Shulchan Aruch. There are three different hadaris. There are three different gradations. This is in Simon Shin Pei Sif Gimel, where the first gradation is that if you have if you save yourself by destroying the property of the Rodape, so for sure the Rodape's life is forfeit anyway, right? Because you have the right to kill him, so you certainly have the right to destroy his property. If you save yourself that by virtue of destroying somebody else's property, so then you are obligated to pay. That's the sugya that we have been talking about. And let's say that somebody else saves you. Somebody else comes along, a do-gooder, and intervenes in the situation, and he saves you by destroying, but in the course of saving you, he destroys somebody else's property. So then we say that really he should have paid. Really he should have paid, because he also, this is the same situation, you destroyed somebody else's property. Even to save somebody else, we say that the halacha is that you would be chayev to pay nezikin. You would be chayev to pay the damage. So why is it that somebody else will be off the hook? It's a takanas chachamim. Maybe it's a takanas Yoshua bin Nun. There's a takana that we say that if you save your since we want to encourage you to save somebody else, so therefore. Even if you damage property in the process, you're going to be off the hook. Otherwise, people would not have been willing to to extend themselves in order to save somebody else's life if they would have to pay for any concomitant damages that they caused. So there's a question. Why do I need a takana? Why do I need a takana to let this third party off the hook? isn't there an obligation that the other person has? There are two. I'm going to ask two questions. First, I'm going to ask a question with respect to the person whose property was damaged, and then I'm going to ask a question with respect to the person who's committing the act of Hatzalah. So with respect to the person whose property was damaged, doesn't that person have an obligation themselves of lo samod al dam riecha? One answer is furnished by the Chidushei Anshei Shem. Very fascinating comment by the Chidushei Anshei Shem in the Dape Harif at the very end of Maseches Baba Kama and Dap Kuf Yud Zayin. He says, why is it that a person is ever obligated to pay when he's matzil sa'atzmo b'mamon chavero? Isn't there an obligation that everybody has of lo saman al dam riecha? So he says that is only if that is the only way that the person could have been, the person could be saved. But if the person would be able to be saved otherwise, that it wasn't absolutely necessary to destroy the property, so then there is no obligation that the owner of the property would have to have the property destroyed in order to save somebody else. And therefore, that's the reason why the destroyer of the property in such a case would be obligated to pay. It comes out, according to the Chidushei Anshei Shem, that this entire halacha, that even the case where a person is the nirdaf, let's say, and they're saving themselves, mamon chavero, that they're only obligated to pay in the event that they really could have avoided whatever it is that they destroy. But if they couldn't have avoided it, then maybe they, according to him, they really would be off the hook and wouldn't be obligated to pay. Another explanation is that we can say that even in the event of, let's say it's a third party, so a third party is obligated in lo samad al dam riecha. A third party is obligated in the mitzvah lo samad al dam riecha. However, if you take a look in Siman Tav Chav Vav, so the Sema quotes the Rosh, that even though the Gemara Sugi and Sanhedrin says that if you have to expend money in order to save somebody, then you still have to expend money. That's the difference between the mitzvah of Hashivos Halo. You don't have to expend money for Shavas Aveda, and the mitzvah of Lo Samad Al Dam Riecha, where you do have to, even though we know from Hashivos Halo, you have to save a person's goof, their physical well-being as well, but you don't have to pay money for it based on that pasuk. Based on the pasuk of Lo Samad Al Dam Riecha, you even have to hire people and pay money for it, but it doesn't mean you don't have the right to be reimbursed. You do have the right to be reimbursed. The Sma is surprised that the Mechaber and Ramah and Siman Tov Chav Vav left out this halakha, so he fills it in for you. And most of the poskim say that the Mechaber and Ramah, they quoted it in Hilchos Pidyon Shvuyim. It's not that they disagree with this halakha, it's already covered elsewhere. Everybody would agree that there's a right to be reimbursed. So therefore, this person is having their property destroyed, so they should have the right to be reimbursed as well. If not for, at least in the case of a third party who's rescuing them, if not for the takana. But we can ask the same question with respect to the matzil. Why is it that the matzil is ever obligated to pay? He's committing a maise hatzalah. And as we said before, that arguably the whole premise of ever having to pay damages is based on a violation of some form of lo samod al dam riecha in terms of the yisra mazik. Here the person has fulfilled the mitzvah of lo samod al dam riecha. So you could argue, going back to that sugi in Sanhedrin. Oh, no, that's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the fulfillment of lo samod al dam riecha is that you also have to be willing to expend your money. You have to be willing to expend your money. Aye, the Sma quotes the Rosh that you have a right to be reimbursed. Yeah, but the Meiri writes, let's say the person's not able to reimburse you. You still have to expend extra money in order to save the person. Even if you're not going to be able to be reimbursed. Some say that if the person's too poor to pay you now, even if they come into money later on, they're never obligated to pay for the fact that you engaged in the rescue. So therefore, there is no intrinsic right that you have just because you have fulfilled lo samod al dam riecha to not have to expend money for it. That's part of the mitzvah that you could say is that this is included in part of the mitzvah. You could also say that even if there is no mitzvah When, let's say, the nitzol is the mazik is performing the mitzvah, is performing a kiyum of lo samano damriyecha, so we could say, according to the shita mekubetzet, the kiyum of the mitzvah is only if the nitzol is in front of you. So we want to, and so we could say, oh, so maybe you would be off the hook if you fulfilled lo samano damriyecha, but not every single case of hatzalah is paradoxically going to be a fulfillment of lo samano damriyecha. We want people to come in with their ambulances from elsewhere, even if they're not present at the situation where a person is in danger. We want them to come from the outside. And if you say, like the Shita Mekubetzet, that Lo Samano Damriyecha doesn't apply to somebody that Shlo Bifanav, so then they're not fulfilling Lo Samano Damriyecha. So therefore, maybe they should be obligated for that reason. So we say, oh, well, because we want to encourage people to engage in Hatzalah, even when they don't have a Chiyuv Lo Samano Damriyecha, therefore we're going to pater them, we're going to exempt them for that reason. So the Shach really, with this backdrop, is coming in from a totally different direction, and he's saying that leaving aside these different shilos of why the person, you know, maybe they should be off the hook based on the obligation of the person whose money is being taken to fulfill Lo Samano Damriyecha, or based on the fulfillment of the matzah Lo Samano Damriyecha. So the Shach claims that this whole thing is an onus gamar. So he answers, no. Since it's pekavana, as we said, it's not considered to be it's not considered to be in the category of onus gamar. So it could be that really what the Shach is saying is a different yesod, which is, yes, of course, on some level, it's an onus gamar. However, we have to figure out, whenever we're looking at a situation of damage, and this applies even to ritzikos situations too, if you're doing a maisa which is deliberately fashioned as a maisa hezek, and you happen to incidentally effectuate hatzalah, when are we magdir it as a maisa hezek? And when are we magdir it as a ma'aseh hatzalah? So the Shach says that if it's committed by kavana, so then we're going to be magdir it as a ma'aseh hezek, and that's why there would be a chiyuv tashlumin whenever it's committed by kavana. Even if there are justifiable reasons to do so, then it still is classified as a ma'aseh hezek because of the fact that it was by kavana. If it wouldn't be by kavana, if it wouldn't be bikavana, and it's mashma that this would be true not only in the case of somebody who is the Good Samaritan, if you pardon the expression, who's saving somebody else, but even in the case of the Nizok himself. The Nizok himself, when he's saving himself a mamon acherim, and let's say he does it to the shelo bikavana, so according to the Shach, al pipashtus, since that's an onus gomer case, both would be off the hook. The one who's saving somebody else would be off the hook, not only mitam takana, but midina. And the Nizok, the person who otherwise, you know, would have been killed, is also going to be off the hook in such a case where it's a shalom b'kavod. And the Pesach Choshen in Simon and Perek Yud Beis in Hilchos Nezikin says this explicitly, and he says that al pi pashtus, whether the person should be off the hook of shalom b'kavod or not, should depend upon this machlokis, if there is a machlokis. At least the machlokis Tosas and Ramban, not clear whether it's a machlokis Machab and Ramah, this machlokis as to whether one is generally off the hook in the case of onus gomer, or whether they're not off the hook in the case of onus gomer. So I saw just 2 weeks ago, Parsha Shmini of this year, there was a recordation of a din Torah, or at least the paskening of a shaila. I don't know if it was a din Torah. The paskening of a shaila in the Beis Din Binas Mishpat. The Beis Din is a rabbi by name of Yitzchak Berach Daskel. So he dealt with the following shiloh, the following situation. A person, I don't really understand all of the technicalities with respect to the treatment of a diabetic, but this is a person, I guess, who is a diabetic, and their sugar level was very, very low. And they very desperately needed a dose of sugar. They somehow made a miscalculation with respect to their sugar level, and they discovered that it was only at 60. They thought it was at 300. It was only at 60. And they desperately needed sugar. And they didn't have any sugar with them. So they broke into somebody's house. They ran to the person's refrigerator. They opened up the refrigerator and they found some grape juice and they guzzled down all of the grape juice and that gave them the sugar that they needed and therefore their life was saved. And as they were running to the refrigerator to gulp down the grape juice, there was, I guess, a game, a child's game that was on the floor They didn't look on the floor. And when Adam responded to Drachim, they didn't look on the floor. I don't know. They had some game there, secret Hitler. I don't know what. And the person destroyed the game, destroyed all of the pieces of the game. And the question was twofold. Number one, did the person have an obligation to reimburse the owner for the grape juice? If I was the owner, I probably would have been Mavato on the grape juice, but that was the question. We had to reimburse the person for the grape juice and whether they had to pay for the damage that was committed to the game. So he paskin, based on all these sugyas in this discussion, that with respect to the grape juice, that's a clear case of matzlos atzmo b'mamon chaver. Based on the Simon Shinpei, based on Simon Shin Nun Tes and Hilchos Gneva Gezela, there is an obligation to pay. But with respect to the Mischak Yeladim, he said clearly he's running to the kitchen, he's running to the refrigerator, he's not looking on the floor, didn't notice that there was a game there belonging to the person's children on the floor. So that was clearly Shalobi Kavana. Since it was Shalobi Kavana, therefore we're going to treat that as an onus. An onus because of the fact, not because it would normally be an onus if somebody broke in and trampled on a game that was that belonged to the children of the house, but because since he was in a situation of onus gomer, because he had to save his life, plus it didn't satisfy the shock's criterion of being bekavana, therefore it goes back to being treated as an onus gomer situation, and he would be putter for having to pay for the children's game. And similar shaila I saw by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. Yitzchak Zilberstein always has very interesting shilos. You can sometimes disagree. You sometimes disagree with the conclusion, but you have to appreciate the Maror Mekomos. You have to always appreciate the Maror Mekomos. Very good Maror Mekomos. So he has a shilo regarding there was a bus driver who worked, I guess, for one of the Israeli bus companies, and there was a child who got his hand stuck in the metal bar that had the electricity running through it, that was in the entranceway to the bus, and if the child would not have been released, then it could have been very dangerous. It could have caused sakanas nefashos, but as a result of cutting away the bar, it caused damage to the bus. So the question was, who's obligated to pay for the damage? And he says, very interestingly, he says that in this particular case, the bus driver obviously would be off the hook, mitam takana, because he saved somebody's life, the mamon acherim, namely the mamon of the bus company. But he said he thinks that the bus driver is off the hook, not only mitam takana, but mitam ikar adin. And he quotes from the chidushe anshe shem. Since according to the chidushe anshe shem, there is only a need to have a person to invoke, shall we say, the takana in a case where the person had no other, where the person had some other recourse, where you could have avoided the damage that was caused in the course of saving somebody's life. But in this particular case, the only way to have saved the child's life under the circumstances, it was a very brief tshuva, so it's hard to figure out the full scenario, under the circumstances was to cut away this metal rod with electricity. That was the only way to save the child's life. So therefore he says that Miyakaradin, so this goes back to our original assumption, if there really is a clear-cut kiyum of losamad al-damriyachos, so maybe the person should be off the hook miyakaradin. So he assumes that you can really make the argument. He says, at least you can make the argument that maybe the person should be off the hook of miyakaradin. But he said that as far as the child was concerned, there was clearly pshi on the part of the child, at least his parents, so they should have to pay the bus company. But at least the bus driver would be off the hook under those circumstances. So let's say once we say that a maisa hatsala could be treated more generously if it's a bona fide action, which is clearly nigdar is a maisa hatsala. If we understand that the shach is saying when is there a liability, that's only if it's a kavana lahazik, and it's or a kavana that you're going to cause that's going to cause damage. So in such a case, we say that it's you're going to cause damage to a person whose life is not in danger, to this third party. So in such a case, you're obligated to pay the third party because that's considered to be a maisa hezek. But let's say with respect to the person who's being saved, you commit an act which is damaging, but it was necessary to commit this damage in order to save the person's life. So clearly we would call that a Maisa Hatzala, at least with respect to the person in question. But let's say that it's not to save the person's life. If we're going to extend this, the whole chapter of Lo Samo, the whole chapter of Lo Samo also extends to saving a person's property. So let's say that you're going to cause damage to a person, but in the course of causing the damage, you save their property. So that's the only way to save their property. So maybe then we would call it a Maisa Hatzala. Or do we say that it's considered to be a Maisa Hezek? So the Makor Chayim, this is quoted by several sources. The Pesachei Koshen has this in Perek Aleph Ha'arachop. Has a discussion in which he had a disagreement with two other Rabbanim. What was the case? The case was a person enters, I guess he has a fight. Reuven has a fight with Shimon, knows that Shimon has a lot of caskets of expensive liquor. He breaks into Shimon's store and he breaks all of the caskets of expensive liquor, and they all spill out onto the floor and they're destroyed. All these expensive barrels of liquor. So is he responsible to pay? Obviously he's responsible to pay. But let's say 2 minutes later, government agents come into the store and they say, "Where are those bottles? We heard there are bottles of whiskey over here." And the owner of the caskets of whiskey had not paid the whiskey tax, had failed to pay the whiskey tax, had not paid whiskey tax for a very long time, since 1792. And there was a major penalty that would have to be imposed upon this person for not having paid the whiskey tax, and they would probably even go to jail. So this would be a much more significant damage than just losing the value of the whiskey. However, what do you know? They discovered no whiskey. There was no whiskey because all of the caskets had been broken. So now the question is, so it turned out that the person unwittingly had committed a Maisa Hatzala. So the Makor Chayim has a whole discussion about this. First, he delves into the sugya and Daf Yud Zayin Rabbeis. Somebody throws a kli, a zoe kli, from a gag, and somebody else breaks it. So we say that other person is potter. So he says, no, but maybe this case is different because it's like what Tosu says, it's not the zoe kli, it's like a zoe chetz on the kli. So therefore, he should be chayiv. And according to the Rashi, the person who is the zorek himself is chayiv. It's only the person who breaks the kli afterwards who's potter. So that's not going to get him off the hook. But then he says, he will be off the hook, however, based on the discussion in the Gemara Menachos. So everyone loves this Gemara Menachos. Gemara Menachos, Andapa, Samach, Dalam, and Aleph, talks about for Hilchos Chi of Shabbos, that a person, there's a tinok that's drowning in the water, and according to some Machlokas, Rava and Rava, somebody spreads a net to catch fish, and they also happen to catch the baby, so are they putter or not? According to one version of the story, the person didn't even know that there was a baby that was drowning. And nonetheless, Rabbi says that the fisherman is putter because we don't go after his makshava, we go after his maisim. So he says, oh, at the end of the day, says the Makor Chayim, the maisim, it was Elokim chashava letova. The person didn't have the makshava that he's going to save the individual from going to jail and having to pay all of the penalties on the unpaid whiskey tax. But lemaisa, that was the result of what he did. So therefore, he should be off the hook. And two other gedolim, the Gon Rosh Kohen, and the Abez and Rav Hurwitz, both disagreed with the Makor Chayim. I think the Abezdin disagreed with him because of Sugyan Baba Basra that said Vandiski. Says Andiski is potter, that if there are tax collectors that come around, they forget to collect from somebody, then his portion of the tax has to be paid by the rest of the people in the town. He doesn't have to reimburse them because we say it's his good luck. So he says it could be this would have been a case of Andiski. Who knows? So we can't assume that the government tax collectors would have come into this person's store. It's possible that they never would have come into the store. And the Gahagarash Kohen gives a different explanation, which is or a different reason to disagree. He says that if at the time of the Hezek, it looked like it was purely a Hezek, and it's only afterwards that circumstances arose that made it not into a Hezek, we go after the Shas Maisa. You can't bring a Raya from the case of the Tinok and the Dagim, because in the case of the Tinok and the Dagim, the Tinok was gathered into the net at the same time as the fish. If the person would have first gathered the fish, and then a minute later, the Tinok would have come along and gone into the net and would still have been breathing, the person would not be off the hook for Hilchos Shabbos because it was not both at the same time. Well, according to the Makor Chaim, no, there's no indication. What the Gemara says, Behela Tinok Bedogim. Says there's no indication in the Gemara that it has to be at the same time. Even if it's afterwards, that would be perfectly okay. This is a whole discussion in postgame with respect to a whole variety of matters. They talk about this in the context of a person mistakenly has their non-Jew heat up food for them, cook food for them on Shabbos. Not much cook food up for them on Shabbos. So, you know, that's a Mi'ul Hakum. So we generally assume that's not permitted on Shabbos, but it would be permitted to have a non-Jew cook the food, and it also would be a Bishul Akum Shal. But it would be permitted, even from the side of Bishul Akum, it would be permitted if there was a Chola Sheim Bo Sakana. So let's say that the person finds themselves a Chola to give the food later on Shabbos, to give the food to a Chola. So according to the Makor Chaim, that would be perfectly permissible. You're able to fix the problem by making a mutter after the fact. I had the shaila. Somebody mistakenly had the asked their non-Jewish maid. They said that to cook the cholin for them, it was ben hashmashus. So they thought it would be okay because you can ask a non-Jew to do malacha ben hashmashus. So he said, yeah, it's okay mitzad that maybe, but not mitzad the bishul akum problem. So then we had to figure out. So, but it turned out he was having somebody as the guest the next day. It was an old lady who was definitely begedu cholin. So I said, okay, so maybe according to this, you can fix the problem by giving it to the old lady if you rely on the Makor Chaim. But anyway, I said, you also have the Svara to potentially be Mako because Cholent is probably not Olel Shulchan Malachim. I subsequently saw that Rav Asher Weiss Shlita had a similar Shaila, and he also was Mako based on, he was Mako for other reasons I didn't fully understand as well, but one of his Svaras to be Mako was that it's Cholent is not Olel Shulchan Malachim. I had never seen that discussed before, whether Cholent is Olel Shulchan Malachim or not, but Baruch Shekivanti. And Rav Shach, of course, has his famous essay in the Avi Ezri about the time that his wife, this is in Hilchos Yontif, about the time that his wife heated up food on Yontif Rishon in order to cook it for Yontif Sheni. And he said, no, you're not allowed to do that. But he figured out a solution. He said, oh, we'll find some guests, and we're going to give the food to the guests. Even if not, wouldn't normally rely upon hoel, but here the guests mamash are eating it, so it'll turn out that the food actually, after the fact, even though the intention was to do it for the next day, but we'll fix it after the fact. And he says it's a mitzvah lefarsim, that he can't understand why this remedy is not brought. Everyone brings down the halacha that you're not allowed to do it and you can't eat the food. He says, why don't the poskim say that if a person did it? Besides just listing the Isser, there's a way to be Masakeh the Isser. You can be Masakeh the Isser. And he brings the Gemara Menachos. You can be Masakeh the Isser because it's like you have the Tinoch going to the net afterwards. So many would say, no, you can't be Masakeh the Isser that way because the Tinoch has to already be in the net at the time. So what I want to bring out is that this runs to the entire question that we're discussing over here about how to be magdir it. Do we say that ultimately, since this maisa resulted in a hatzala, so after the fact we're going to be magdir it as a maisa hatzala? Do we say no? That if initially it was intended for hatzala, or even if initially there was hatzala there, the person didn't intend it, you could use the Gemara Menachos for the case. This is the famous case that they quoted, the person who smashes a window of a car because he wants to steal the car, and then it turns out that there was a baby inside that was suffocating, and he saved the baby's life. Right? What else? Also, I think one of the Rav Zilbush things, I didn't find it, but I've heard that scenario. So there would be a Maiseh Hatzalah B'Shas Maiseh. So there would be more room to be Mekel if you got to be Mekel based on Gemara Menachos. But if the Hatzalah situation only arose afterwards, so you'd be Magdir it, even though the Maiseh there was Hatzalah, just like in the case of Kavanah, in Matzal Atzma Roman Acherim, the Maiseh there was Hatzalah, but because it was done with Kavanah, so we're going to be Magdir it as a Maiseh Hezek, and so too in this case as well, we'd be Magdir it as a Maiseh Hezek. Yes. There's no increased value, though. There's no increased value.
Really, this person gains by having smashed whiskey rather than fully formed whiskey. So it does go up in value, but I'm saving him a loss.
It's indirect. It's very hard to say that. It's like the case somebody stole a shore, and then it was Mesa Kidarka, and we say that the Ganem is still going to be Chayev, because even if it hadn't died, it would still have been in the Rishus of the Ganem. So it's in the Rishus, once there's already a Chiyuv that sets in, we're not going to eradicate or undo the chiyuv. Yeah.
It could be, I mean, one of the biggest question of just kindly say, putting one stamp and making another stamp a lot more expensive. So there, you're not increasing the value of the actual nice hazik. Nice hazik is done.
Right.
The whiskey's on the floor, the stamp is burned. But since, in total, you've raised his value by $1 million, because the other one now went up. So apparently, I've heard the Rav Chaim reported that if it totally takes away the shoviyat nezek, then it totally goes up in value, then you're actually putting it.
Even though it only goes up in value after the fact.
Even if it's after the fact, yeah. It has to be assessed still, in terms of purchase support.
Yeah, but here the whiskey didn't go up in value. Maybe that would be true. If the whiskey that poured on the floor went up in value. But the mice of the whiskey itself was completely stripped of any value that it might have had. So we're talking about the hezek to the whiskey itself. So I don't even think that that would be a way out. Interestingly, this is really a footnote to the discussion. If you look in the source Tezayin, and this is a little bit surprising. So with respect to this takana, that a person can do hezek b'mamon acherim and be off the hook because we want them to save the other person. So he wrote to the Baba Barebi, Shlomo Habishtam, after the Holocaust. He had collected money in order to save people during the Holocaust, and now he had some the money that he had borrowed money. And the lenders, I guess, wanted whatever money he wanted. They wanted the money back. Whatever money he expended in order to save lives, they wanted the money back. And apparently his chassidim weren't able to come up with the money. So he just wanted to confirm from Rav Moshe that he was off the hook. And Rav Moshe said, off the hook? Are you kidding me? You're not off the hook. There was a takana with respect to Ezekiel to be off the hook. There's no takana with respect to Gezel. Comes to Gezel, you're not going to be off the hook. You took money from people and you're not going to return. I believe Patim Mechiyu Gezel Behoba Lo Tiknu. Nothing doing. And even in a case of Mazik, he says if it was not in the way of the Rodei, but then it would not. It was not in the way of the Matzil when he needed to save the Nirda from the Rodei. It's not Bechlal Hatakana. Therefore, that's the way he understands the Gemara and Bava Kamma Daf Samak, very different from the Chidushei Anshei Shem. So therefore, he says we would not expand the Takana in this fashion. So some say that this idea of Rav Moshe is also a consideration, even in terms of the Chi of Mammon to begin with, meaning that why do we impose the Chi of Mammon? In this case, I gave a couple of answers, even though the person is fulfilling Los Amot, but another explanation could be because otherwise that we would just have chaos, because people would just damage everyone else's property left and right and say, oh, I intended to save lives. I didn't say, well, okay, you're not always successful when you said they intend to save lives, but I intended to save lives. So some say, well, certainly, you know, when it comes to borrowing money, so everyone's going to just borrow money and say, yeah, I borrow the money because I thought I would save lives borrowing the money. That's why I borrow the money. And then nobody would ever have to return any money. So that's another consideration. You could say that the fee of payment itself is mitam takana, although it's not really mashma that way. So to segue from Nezikin to Ritzicha, I start with a rush. So the rush in Yud Zayin, but I think did I leave out something? I left out something. So I left out a discussion. I thought I had it here in my notes. I must have had it earlier. Yeah, it's over here. There's a discussion. What about if it's not in a case of Rodef and Nirdaf? Not a case of Rodef and Nirdaf. So I already extended this to property, but let's say it's a case of Pikuach Nefesh. So it's very, very interesting. Because there's an Aruch HaShulchan, I have that at the very, very end of the sources. The Aruch HaShulchan says that if you are, let's say, running to save a person because it's a Pikuach Nefesh situation, so he says that this would be considered to be Ratz Bereshus. That just like if a person runs, like we have the Halakha Bisi Ben Yehuda, right? Person runs on Erev Shabbos and knocks into somebody, that's Ratz Bereshus. So to fulfill a mitzvah, so therefore they're off the hook. So he says this is also considered to be ratz bereshus, and that therefore the person is going to be off the hook. He does not explain why this would be more kal than the person who is destroying somebody else's property in order to save someone else's life, when mi'ikar adin, they be chayiv, and we only say the patim b'nei tikkun ha'olam. Maybe because over here he's saying that it's not b'kavana, so therefore he says that this is also included, it's not b'kavana, and it's ras b'rashus, so therefore the person's not going to be chayiv in this case. The Or Sameach on in his Perush al Gemara al Shas in Daf Lamed Beis Baba Kama says otherwise, that because the takana of a person who's running is only because we assume on Erev Shabbos everyone knows to be careful of the people who are running late to shul, so everyone knows to be much more cautious. But here, a person wouldn't necessarily, the bystander on the street wouldn't know that there's a pikuach nefesh situation in the works. And therefore there'd be no p'tur on that basis. But there probably would be a p'tur on the basis of the takana to say to not hold anybody liable in a case where they're rescuing a nirdaf. So if that's true, where they're rescuing a nirdaf, it probably is true in a case of pikuach nefesh as well. Rav Asher Weiss raises this question, a shaila was posed to a number of poskim. This is in the Sefer Hatzalos Nefashos. As somebody who's driving their ambulance and in order to, like a Hatzal ambulance, in order to save somebody's life, and they get into an accident and they cause damage. So are they obligated in reimbursing the owner of the property for the damage that they caused or not? So so Avashu Weiss quotes first the sugya of Ratz Bereshus. He says Ratz Bereshus Mistama is along the lines of what the Chazon Ish was saying, that we don't expect people to be liable when they act minhag shel olam. But it's not minhag shel olam that everyone, especially if old like the Or Sameach, that is like an expectation of chayav adam lizayir. Here is no chayav lizayir on the part of people not knowing that there's going to be a pikuach nefesh situation. Therefore, he says that there wouldn't be release. Let's say the person struck somebody as they're driving. I think that was his situation. But then he raises the question. He also says that driving is not like running. Even if there's rishus on Erev Shabbos to run for a mitzvah, that doesn't mean that there's rishus to go in a car, which is a very formidable weapon, and to run red lights because you're running late on an Erev Shabbos. That he says, this is an important point because people assume otherwise. They assume there's a special heter on Erev Shabbos that you're allowed to go through red lights. He says, no, because that's clearly presenting a clear danger to everybody, a very serious danger of Sakanas Nefashos. There's no heter to run red lights on Erev Shabbos if you're driving a car. So that's not the heter. But he says there would be the heter would be based on the takana of if you're going to run to save somebody's life or pikuach nefesh. So let's move on to the Rosh. Yes, you got a question? Somebody? Yeah.
The gentleman went on road and there was time. The mission that he's been here, I tell him and I give him warning. If I did wrong, I stopped short, he's tired.
So he right.
The ambulance, they brought up the sirens. There was time, if there was time to push them out of the way.
I guess we're talking about a situation where maybe it wasn't an ambulance with sirens. The person was just driving in a car, you know, that there was no Hatzalah available and they didn't have the ability to have sirens. You have to say something like that. But then in Achinami, they would probably, the person should be chayv if they didn't put on the sirens. I'll be pashtus. Okay, so unless you say no, because if they knew that it was dependent upon that, then they wouldn't engage in Hatzalos Nefashos altogether. It's a very difficult calculus. You don't have the right to kill somebody outright. So Mistama, you're right. So the Rosh is speaking about the case of a person who incites a dog, Mashes Hakelet. You incite a dog to bite somebody else, and it bites you. So you were Shina and the dog. So the dog. So. Therefore, because of the fact that you started out being Mishana, the owner of the dog is going to be Pater. So the Rosh launches from there onto a discussion about where he says, if I have two Shvarim Tamin that both were attacking each other, so then we have an obligation that whoever suffered the most damage is an obligation of paying chatzin ezek. But he says that if one shore struck first, the other shore, and then the other shore fought back, so then there would be a pitur. And he extends that to chen shnei anashim. So too, if I have two people, one person punches, Reuven punches Shimon, and Shimon punches back, so Shimon is going to be off the hook. And he starts out with a discussion of if somebody else is Mishana, and that causes you to be Mishana, so then you're going to, the second person is going to be off the hook. The second person is going to be Potter. But then he says, however, this is only if the measure of retaliation is going to be in accordance with what was absolutely necessary. If it's more than was absolutely necessary, so that already is a maisa chavol. If it was more than what was absolutely necessary, and he says that's different from an animal. An animal gets heated up, so you can't expect an animal to calibrate what's absolutely necessary. It's not absolutely necessary. The animal is always going to be off the hook. So he starts out talking about a mishana ba'akev ishinabo pater, and then he goes into, well, it's an act of hatzala. So the Chazon Ish says, what's going on over here? He started out, this is the Chazon Ish, Simen Ches Ozayin, started out talking about Komishana Vachavishina Bo Potter, and then he goes into how the whole explanation of why the owner of the second shore is off the hook is based on Hatzala, so he doesn't really understand. He says, if you go about six lines, seven lines down, in source Yud Ches, Udvarazat Sarach Iyim Kiman Talacha Gorim Kein Lohavli Lahaskir. Now, I just quoted the text from the Chazon Ish that I have, but the text didn't make 100% sense. So I looked in the Chazon Ish, in the base medrash, and they have on the bottom, they said, I think you can do Mali that you got to add a few words. That's what I thought, too. So he gives the words that you should add. So after the words, Lahaskir, it should say, Lohavli Lahaskir, Tam Hatzala. The Rosh shouldn't have mentioned the Tam Hatzala, Elami Tam Kol Mishuna. He should have just had the explanation that he started with of Kol Mishuna, that's the reason, at least in the case of the animal, or the second animal is off the hook. Ella, so therefore he says, Lohavli Lasker, Tam Hatzala, Elami Tam Kol Mishuna. So he says, and then V'yesh Napkusa, the continuation of that sentence is V'yesh Napkusa. And he says, and there's a Napkusa Gedola, because if it would be Mitam Hatzala, so then the second animal, the owner of the second animal should only be off the hook if it's the amount of retaliation that's necessary. So why did he move away from Mitam Kol Mishuna? So he says, this is the Chazon Ish L'shitoso, that in order for something to be a nezik, it has to have some sort of a tsuras a nezik. So he says that if I have a situation where a person is moshech alav is a nezik, the person brings the nezik upon themselves, so then in such a case, that's not considered to be tsuras a nezik, and that's the reason why the other person is going the second person is the owner of the second animal, is going to be Patzer, because the first one was Moshech Alav Es HaNezek. And even though we say that we paskin like Rav against Reish Lakish, right, that if I have an animal that falls down, he was Mishanet, and then a second animal comes along and kicks it, that the owner of the second animal is going to be Chayev, that's because the second animal could have just walked on top of the first animal. Didn't have to kick it. But in this case, the Rosh is saying, because there is Hatzal involved, that the second animal has to protect itself, so therefore, even if it fights actively against the second animal, it's going to be off the hook, because the second was Moshech Alav is HaNezek. So this helps to understand any situation. Also, another key in terms of being Magdir, whether something is considered to be a Maisa Nezek or whether it's considered not to be a Maisa Nezek, is whether the person is being hurt was Moshe Kalavis HaNezek. So we understand, for example, in the case of a Nirduf. A Nirduf is one is never going to be Chayev for hurting the Nirduf, at least in the measure that's necessary, because he was Moshe Kalavis HaNezek, so it's not considered to be a Maisa Kavolah. If, however, as the Rosh says, you hurt the person more than is absolutely necessary, so then it no longer becomes a Maisa Hatzala, it becomes a Maisa Nezek. So this is another application of this same principle. And once we have this permission, shall we say, from the Rosh, to extend this to how much a Nizik is allowed to hurt the Mazik, we're not dealing with an animal that becomes heated up, and how much a Nirduf is allowed to hit a Rodeh, so now we can understand as well that it's not only a question of Hagdara, of Maisa Hatzala, in the context of Hilchos Nezikin, but it's also a question of the proper Hagdara of what's considered to be a Maisa Hatzala whenever we have a fulfillment of Lo Saman Adam Riecha, as with respect to cases of Ritzicha. So the first case, obviously, that comes to mind is how much a niyadup is allowed to strike a vode. If the Rosh takes the position, which is the pashas in the sugya and gemara in Sanhedrin daf memtes, that a niyadup for the whole case of Avner and Asayel, that a niyadup is only allowed to whack the vode as much as possible. There are other poskim that say, other meforshim for the sugya that say, no, the niyadup really has the niyadup doesn't have to calibrate exactly how much amount of damage will get the job done. They have to be worried that maybe they have to kill the road ape, and therefore they're always justified in terms of killing the road ape. Maybe the case of Asael and Avner was different because Avner very deliberately struck him in a place where he knew it wasn't necessary to strike him and did extra than he needed to do. So that was a different story. But normally the Nerduff would be off the hook, but somebody else, would not be off the hook if they struck a rodeik more than is necessary. Not only that, but it's considered to be shofech damim. It's considered to be a maise of shofech damim, according to the lashon and the lashon of the Rambam. It's a lashon of even if he's not put to death by bezin shamata, only by bezin shamala, the way the Rambam passes machlokas Rambam and Ravid. Still, it's considered to be. We go very, very precipitously from what's considered to be a maise hatzala and a mitzvah kiyum of losamino derech achiyuv. In fact. To what becomes a maise ritzicha, where the person commits a maise ritzicha. Very, very thin line. What's the thin line here? What is absolutely necessary and what is not absolutely necessary? So I'd like to just mention a few other areas of halacha where we have this same thin line and where we have this cheshbon and consideration that we have to be able to apply. One is, I don't think that anybody necessarily says this explicitly, but they say it implicitly. So I'm just making it more explicit. I think it relates to the sugya of Machnis Adam L'Sapik Sakana Kidei L'Hatzi L'Eschaveiro Mevadai Sakana, where there's a machlokis as to whether there's a chiyuv to do this or not. The Beis Yosef quotes the Yerushalmi towards the very end of Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpah, quotes the Yerushalmi that there's a chiyuv to do so. Question whether Yerushalmi says that. Some case involving Reish Lakish saying, oh, I'm going to go and save somebody who was captured, and either I'll get killed or I'll save him in the process. So that seems to indicate that you're supposed to place yourself in a suffix sakana situation. Maybe for Reish Lakish it wasn't such a suffix sakana. We know that he was a very capable swashbuckler, so that maybe for him it was more obvious he would be successful. Don't know. But that's the proof from the Yerushalmi, and then there seems to be proofs from the Babli, the case of the people who are running away and were looking for refuge. And Rabbi Taplin said, I'm not going to give them refuge, case in Nida, where's the Daf Samech? Because according to one interpretation, why should I jeopardize my own life? As Tosfos says, so it seems that the Babli disagrees with the Yerushalmi and says the person is not obligated to place themselves in a suffix Sakana. Says the Tshuva of the Radbaz. Advaz says, it was a question of a person who could have saved somebody else by amputating a limb. He said that he thinks that if you're going to place yourself in a sakana to save somebody else, then you're a chassid shote. You're a chassid shote because lo adif vade techabre misafek didei. Why should you put yourself in a situation where you might take your own life? So from the Lashon of Advaz, it seems that there's mamish in iser bedover. So Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach both say in different places that of course you have no right to give up your life in order to save somebody else. You can't give up your life in order to save somebody else. There's some medrash or something, some Sefer Hasidim, that is a little bit of a kasha about this, about Amar is giving up his life for Talmud Chacham, but there are ways to be miyashib it, and I don't know that it's such a strong kasha from a Sefer Hasidim, but they say that it's obviously usher to give up your life. So I think that's what the Radbaz is saying, that when there is a serious threat to a person's life, not only is not a question of whether it's chayav or mutter, but it's a question of issa. Why is it issa? Because again, it's a question, we magdi the act as a maisa hatzala, which could be a mitzvah, either a chiyuv or a rishus, but a maisa mitzvah. We magdi it as a maisa ritzicha, that we know that the psikta says that one interpretation of lo tirtzach is lo sitit ratzeach. Can't kill other people, you also can't kill yourself. Even if I learn it, even if I derive the pasuk, the issa from a different pasuk, it's an issa ritzicha, that you're not allowed to kill yourself is in his mamish and issa retzicha, not just some sort of outside issa like the Minchas Chinuch says, but it seems like it's mamish and issa retzicha to kill yourself. So therefore, here too, when we speak about being magdir, when to place yourself in a situation of sakana, if you do it in a situation where you're very likely to die, so it could be an isser because of the fact that then it goes into the territory of isser retzicha, retzicha satzmo. So that's why it's very important to calibrate when it becomes, when it's a maise hatzala. And it's also true on the other end of the spectrum. If there's no suffix whatsoever that if you do something, you're definitely going to save somebody's life, and you're worried that, if I put myself in this situation, maybe something will happen to me, but it's only a 0.00001% of a possibility. So there already the Radbaz says you shouldn't overcalculate. Like the Aruch HaShulchan brings this down as well, the end of Choshen Mishpat. You shouldn't be overly machmir, because then you could be violating what is a real chiyuv of lo saman adam riecha if you're overly concerned about placing yourself into sakana. So too, I think this is true. This is very halacha l'maisa. It's very halacha l'maisa. The Teferis Yisrael writes in Maseches Yuma, when they came out with the smallpox vaccine, so 1 out of 1,000 people were dying from the vaccine. So he said, because you have like dozens of people who would die from smallpox if you didn't take the vaccine, so therefore it's proper to place yourself in a sakana rechok in order to save yourself and other people from a sakana krova. So imagine that if you have a vaccine where nobody dies, mamish, nobody dies. You just have a few crackpots who say that people are getting autism but have no proof from it. But if you don't see to it that you and your family take the vaccine, so mamish, you're putting people in a state of sakana, never mind the chil Hashem, which itself is a sakana. You're putting people in a state of sakana. So then not only is it not any kind of a mitzvah fulfillment to avoid taking the vaccine, but it's mamish a commission of an isser. It's a violation of lo saman al dam riecha, because there's no fear, there's no sakana whatsoever. It's not 1 in 1,000 people, it's not 1 in 1,000,000 people. Nobody's dying from the vaccine, but people are occasionally dying from measles if the vaccine is not properly taken. So there it would be mamish, you know, achiv, would be a violation if you didn't take the vaccine. Yeah.
So the fact that people die at some point as a result of is that considered
in his day, so many people are dying from the smallpox, it was the sakana krova. So this relates, we only have about 15 minutes or less, so let me just get in the other points that I wanted to make. So this very chakira of trying to properly parse between when it's a maisa hatzol and when it's a maisa ritzicha is the subject of another famous chazon ish. It's what we call the trolley problem. So Philippa Foot, who was a professor of philosophy, I think in England, so she came up in 1967 with the trolley problem. This is after the Chazon Ish died. And she said, let's say that you have somebody who is driving a trolley. That's why it's called the trolley problem. I don't think she used the word trolley. Runaway tram. Nobody knows even what that means anymore. So trolley, maybe we can relate to a little bit. There's a trolley, a person's driving a trolley, and the trolley is running away. The brakes don't work, and it's going to go into the tracks where there are 6 people who are singing, I have been working on the railroad, and they're about to be killed by this runaway tram. And the only thing that the driver can do is to turn it into the other direction, go in a different set of tracks, and there's only one person who's singing, I've been working on the railroad, who's working away on that set of tracks. So does the driver have a responsibility to drive away from the 6 people who will be killed to go to the one person? And do we say, basically her question is that a proper Maisa Hatzala? Is that a responsible Maisa Hatzala? So it's a mitzvah. She doesn't use this terminology. Is it the proper thing to do? Or is that considered to be a Maisa Ritzicha? And she doesn't resolve the issue. She just presents the issue. She says most people would assume that, of course, he should go in the direction of least resistance and only kill the one person as opposed to the 6. But she says, if you had an equivalent case of a judge who could frame somebody to stop a lynch mob from killing 10 innocent people, everyone would agree, of course, you shouldn't frame the person. She said, but that's exactly the same issue. So why do people assume in that case you shouldn't do it, and in this case you should do it? It doesn't make any sense. So she's working with the assumption that people, you know, would already come to certain conclusions, and she points out the stira in people's thinking. So the Chazon Ish asked the same question in Sanhedrin Siman Lechafei earlier. He was nifter in 1953. Since he was nifter in 1953, obviously he formulated his question many years before Philippa Foot. So Yesh Chokma V'Goyim Tamin, but obviously Torah V'Goyim Al Tamin. She obviously hadn't read the Chazon Ish, otherwise she would have quoted the Chazon Ish. You have to give proper attribution. if you're a an academic. So the Chazon Ish posed exactly the same shaila, a little bit different formulation. There is a there's an arrow that's flying in the air, and you're the Flash, you're the Flash's brother or something, and you have the ability to be able to steer the arrow in a different direction. It's going to go definitely into six people and kill them. I don't know how exactly an arrow will go definitely into six people and kill them. All right, but it's a theoretical scenario. And if you would be able to deflect the arrow, so then it would only kill one person. It would definitely kill one person. So the Chazon Ish asks, so is this considered to be proper from the standpoint of halacha? So he quotes the famous discussion when it comes to Ritzicha. Ritzicha has a totally different set of cheshbonos than Ezekim. But whatever the cheshbon is, we know the Hagdaras Ritzicha is. The Hagdaras Ritzicha is, normally you're not allowed to give away even one person to be killed, even to save an entire town of people, even to save 1,000 people. That's the famous Tosefta, the Yerushalmi, is paskin by the Rambam, that the marauders come and they say, hand over one person. And if you don't, they even designate the person. Everyone agrees if they don't designate the person, you can't hand them over. But Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, if they designate the person, say hand them over, Rabban Paskins, like Reish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan, that even if they designate the person, and the Kesef Mishnah assumes even if that person would have been killed anyway, together with everybody else, not everyone assumes that way, it's the Kesef Mishnah of Chaim Ozer, most mainstream Poskin, the Chazon Ish also assumes this way. I think Chaim Ozer does too, but they say that you can't give over the person unless the Chaim Isa Kesher ben Mikvi, based on the story in Tanakh. Unless the Chaim Isa Kesher ben Mikvi, you can't give over the person. So even if you're going to save lots of lives in the process, that's still considered to be a Maaser Ritzicha. So do we say in this particular case that you're not giving over, you're not saving people by giving over others to be killed, you're saving people by deflecting an arrow. So maybe that's considered to be a Maisa Hatzalah. On the other hand, he says that you can also argue in the other direction. That's what the Chazon Ish says. It says maybe since this is, it's not that you give over someone to be killed and then afterwards everyone is going, afterwards everybody else is going to be saved, that for sure is no good. But here, with the actual, you're not giving over someone to be killed, you're just deflecting an arrow, and it happens it's going to kill somebody, so maybe this is better. So a lot of people stop at this point, the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish has like 15, Chazon Ish, he writes a lot. So after he wrote this, so then there was like another 15 lines or so of a digression, so a lot of people stopped there. They said, oh, Chazon Ish shows that this is what you're supposed to do. According to the Chazon Ish, this is a Maisa Hatzolah. Rav Aryeh Lawrence, in his Sefer Mishnah Pikuach Nefesh, assumes, yeah, according to the Chazon Ish, this is a Maisa Hatzolah. Rav Asher Weiss assumes, yeah, according to the Chazon Ish, this is a Maisa Hatzolah. That's what you're supposed to do. But he goes on. If you read, the next 15 lines of the Chazon Ish says at the end, Miu Hachagara, maybe this case is actually worse than the case of handing over somebody to the enemy, to Horeg B'Yadayim. Because in that case, you're just handing over someone to the enemy. The enemy's going to kill the person. Here, where you deflect the arrow, so the actual deflection of the arrow, even though you can say the deflection itself is a maisa hatzol, it's not an act of ritzicha, of giving someone over to be killed, but the act of deflection is going to cause the arrow to go directly into the heart of this other one person. And therefore, maybe this case is actually worse. So he leaves it unresolved. So the Tzitz Eliezer says, no, he leaves it unresolved. Therefore, Shevi al Tase Odif. If there's a driver who's driving and he sees he's about to barrel into six people, and he can steer away from those six people because his brakes aren't working, the only thing he can do is steer away from those six people and kill one person. He says it's a Tzitz Eliezer, he should just Shevi al Tase Odif, even though it means that the six people are going to be killed, and rather than the one person. And this but the Chazon Ish, so that's the question. Whether, again, it runs to this issue, am I magdir it as a Maisa Hatzal or am I magdir it as a Maisa Ritzicha? Now, you could say, Rabbi Bleich suggests something along these lines, not exactly what I'm about to say, but along these lines. You could say that maybe the case of the Chazon Ish is, in a way, worse than the case of leap of foot in terms of the latitude of being magdir as a maisa hatzol. In the case of leap of foot, you have the trolley driver. The trolley driver, arguably on some level, under Muli Olam, on some level is responsible for the damage that they're going to cause through their kocho, that they're going to barrel into all of these people, even if the people jumped on the road. Maybe they shouldn't have been going so fast, whatever it was. So arguably there's a chiyuv on the part of the trolley driver to turn away from the people who are otherwise going to be killed, even if, as a result, they end up killing somebody else. But in the case of the arrow that's being deflected, So the person who is deflecting the arrow had nothing to do with the creation of the situation. All that person is doing is taking an arrow and steering it in the direction of a particular person. So it could be that that's much more of a Maisa Ritzicha than the case that Philippa Foote speaks about. That's, you know, a suggestion that I wanted to make. All of this, you know, a couple of other applications of this principle. It was a question whether you could shoot down the plane going into the World Trade Center. The Post can discuss. That's what the Mishnah Spikuach Nefesh discusses. The question of the baby that's crying while the people are hiding from the enemy, like from the Nazis. And if the Nazis hear the baby, they'll kill everybody. But if you suffocate the baby, then the people won't be killed, but you'll kill the baby. So it's a Maisa Ritzicha. So you have a Machlokis, a Poskim, in all these different cases. So whether to be Magdir, that is a Maisa Ritzicha, whether to be Magdir is a Maisa Tzona. With the World Trade Center case, he was shooting down a plane with innocent victims. So they asked Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim Kanievsky gave a classical of Chaim Kanievsky answer. Nista Paknu Mezeh. Not sure. Okay, then I'm sure there's a footnote giving, you know, 1,000 Mara Mekomas as to what he meant by that. Nista Paknu Mezeh. It's okay. So he says it's a suffix. It's a suffix. He's eloquent in that way. He's eloquent in that way. So it's a suffix. These are all, you know, suffix situations. Exactly how to be magdir ma'aser tzol. Exactly how to be magdir ma'aser tzicha. Similarly with the baby. So in the sefer divrei benana, he says, I'll tell you why I think he can't suffocate the baby. It happens to sefer gay hariga held that you could suffocate the baby. The baby's a rodent. Maybe passing like those shitas that say if the person themselves would get killed, you could kill everybody. As Pasha says, we don't pass in that way. Okay. So Divrei Renana said, what do you want from the baby? The baby is just acting ketivil shalom. It's like the Rambam's explanation of why you can't kill the fetus when it comes out of the mother's womb. And the Gemara says, Mishmaya kavod filei. And the Rambam says, it's because it's tivil shalolam. What do you want from the baby? It's just tivil shalolam. So what right do you have to go after somebody who's just standing on the corner of the street? Like the Chazanish says, but all of Hilchos Nezikin. What do you want from somebody who's just acting kiminhago shalolam? This relates as well to the Shaila. I promised you, I said I wanted to speak about automated cars. So all of this is just one giant introduction to automated cars. So when it comes to automated cars, so there are two shilas with respect to automated cars. So shila number one with respect to automated cars is it a good thing? Is it something we should support? Right now, we have cars that are not automated. They're human driven. So you can say that it's been the most lethal object that's been introduced to humanity probably from the beginning of civilization. That you have scores and scores of people are killed every single day through reckless drivers and the like. I went to a conference in Eretz Yisrael a couple of months ago, and they were speaking about automated cars and other such things. One of the speakers quoted from the Stipel Gaon. He said that the Stipel Gaon once said, had the Shaila been presented to the Gedolim of Europe, whether it was permitted to introduce cars. So this type said, I'm not so sure that they would have said that it's mutter. It's been the most giant hezek ever in the history of the world. But if you introduce the automated cars, so they'll be able to watch out for all kinds of different things, just like we now have more or less automated planes. For the most part, they don't take nosedives. For the most part, they've been safer, really, than cars. They've been much safer than people driving cars. Automated cars, if you had automated cars as well, be much safer. You have much fewer people who would die. So you can make the argument, yeah, but right now, each individual driver can engage in defensive driving, can be very, very careful. They're in control. So maybe if you took that away and you introduced all the vagaries of the things that could go wrong in terms of automated cars, so people would be subject to new types of ways of being killed that they wouldn't be subject to right now. So maybe you have no right to impose that upon people. So it goes back to my Shiloh about the question of suffix sakana, how we magdir things. Are we magdiris and maisa atzol? Since on the whole, it's going to save lots and lots of more people, and we're not going to be able to say with respect to any individual person, that person will end up being killed. And we can't say with respect to any individual person that they're completely protected nowadays, because the person can be the most careful driver in the world, and still they can be barreled into by a wrong-way driver or somebody who's distracted from their cell phone or a drunken driver or something like that. So I would think, but no. So it's definitely something that should be supported. That's question number one. Then there's question number two. Question number two, and this is what all the philosophers are speaking about right now. They're fascinated by this. Is the question of when you have the programmers who are programming the automated cars, if they have the trolley problem situation. The trolley problem situation, how should they program the car to react in that situation? Should they program the car to barrel into, say, the five people who are in front of the car, or program the car to veer away, even though for sure the car will somehow know, it's a smart car, it's going to know that it's going to kill one person who's standing on the side. So a lot of the thinkers in the base medrash, Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Yosef Sprung, wrote an article about this. I think Rabbi Bleich also held this way. He got up and he spoke at the conference. I spoke one day, he spoke the following day, and we said opposite things. Very nice. But I didn't directly go against. I wasn't Sosa because I spoke first. I know what he's going to say. So Rabbi Bleich thought that this case, for sure, is not going to be in the Chazon Ish case, the trolley, probably the case of the Chetz. He said, for sure, that's a Maisa Ritzicha. We didn't understand how there was any two ways about it. He said, you're steering the arrow directly into somebody. So, of course, that's a Maisa Ritzicha. Of course, you can't do that. But he said here, since at the B'Shas Maisa, nobody is engaged in a Maisa Ritzicha. You're just trying to program the car in such a way that it will take the fewest number of lives possible. So he thought that was much better. So I thought that you could make an argument in the opposite direction. You could say that since in this particular case the dangerous situation has not yet been created, so there is no responsibility on the part of the driver at that moment in time. They haven't created the situation to steer away from all the people that are standing in front of the car and to go in the direction of the other person. So even if you would hold that in that particular scenario it is a Maisa Hatzala, in this particular scenario you're programming L'chatchila in such a way that you're going to create a Maisa Ritzicha. You're going to direct the car in this particular situation. We want you to go into this individual. And this individual is just standing on the side of the road. Otherwise, would not be in danger, is acting ketivo shalolam, is otherwise protected, and because of our programming, we are now going to program this car to directly ram into this individual and to kill and murder this individual. So I thought, again, I think that these are very, very difficult questions. It goes back to the shach of how do you define something as either a maisa hezek or maisa hatzala. I think that these are very, very difficult, and the question of Gemara Menachos and so forth, very difficult questions, but to me, it's Tzorach Iyun Gadol, requires, you know, a lot more careful consideration. Yes?
When is when you're programming, you know, nothing, the car can't do a Maisa Ritzicha.
You're programming the Chatzkila. Is this a proper thing to do for us to program the Chatzkila so that there's going to end up, in the end, being a Maisa Ritzicha? So I think that it's a... I don't even know. It would be the same situation if you're programming planes. If there's a plane, you program the plane in such a way that if it's about to go into a tall building and it has the option to steer instead to go into a smaller building, so is that something that you should program automatically? They obviously didn't program it that way when you had the plane that went into the World Trade Center. I don't know. To me, it's not Pashut. It's not Pashut. They wanted to say that everybody would agree. And the whole Olam, if you asked everybody, they would agree. I don't know that everybody would agree. Maybe you have to poll people. Also, let's say they're Ketanim. Ketanim aren't Barachi. If they're standing on the side of the road to agree that they would rather be killed for the good of the Olam, that the fewest possible people get killed. I'm not sure. I leave it as a question mark. So let me just conclude with Mili de Garita, since I think that's the minute. It seems to me that especially when we're dealing with the question of the nirdah. So he said that when a person, the rush, the smak, what did the rush? That if the person himself is rescued by somebody else and that person had to expend money on their behalf, so they're supposed to reimburse them. So where does this notion come from? Obviously, as we mentioned, the obligation will exist, like the Mimi said, even if they're not able to reimburse them. So I think that it's also a notion, whenever there's a hatzala that's performed on somebody, so there has to be a certain amount of hakara satov. There has to be a certain amount of hakara satov. So as we're entering into the Pesach, the Yantiv, that's a very important theme. With respect to Pesach, we speak about v'hitzalti, v'otzesi, v'hitzalti, v'galti, v'lakachti. So to me, I think v'hitzalti is a lashon whenever there's a hatzala. One of the major themes of Pesach is that there's an obligation of hakara satov. So the whole story of Pesach is filled with hakara satov. So Rabbi Simon Sefer, he has all kinds of examples of hakara satov in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't perform the first couple of plays because it's a hakara satov towards the earth and the water. And he had to ask permission from Yisrael before he could go down to Mitzrayim because the whole geula was premised upon an understanding and appreciation of hakara satov towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I wanted to be Mechadesh that there's a Gemara in Baba Kama. This is Baba Kama related, not going so off the charts. Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Beis, that talks about that if you serve wine in somebody's home, by the waiter, you're supposed to thank the waiter, even though the wine belongs to the Balabas. right? That chama lamari b'tavila shikuse. Even though the wine belongs to the owner, you're supposed to give thanks to the waiter. So a shekta quotes from the Rav, and the same exact thought is echoed by Rabbi Friedlander, the former Mashkiach of Panovich in the Sefer Sifsei Chaim. Say the same is the same idea that in order to have proper hakaras hatov to the owner, you got to show the hakaras hatov even to the waiters. They have the proper hakaras hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is really what the Gemara is saying. You have to show hakaras hatov for all the shluchim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So we know that one of the themes of the Haggadah is that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned at all. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name mentioned? To remind us that we're supposed to have a karas hatov, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us b'kvod v'atzmo out of Mitzrayim. So akasha that's sometimes asked is, okay, so if we wanted to accentuate that point, so why do we end up with this one indirect reference of Moshe Rabbeinu's name? It doesn't even seem like it was necessary. We have Rabbi Yosef Lili says that there was Al Hayam, there were you know, five times as many makos as 50 makos as there was Biyabasha, and he quotes the pasuk because of the fact it says Biyar Yisar as a Yad Agdola. Share a sub in Mitzrayim. We saw there was a yad as opposed to a Mitzrayim, it was only etzba, etzba elokim, right? Because v'yom ha'char tzumim, el paro, etzba elokim hi. So here, instead of an etzba, it was a yad, so it's five times as many yamakos. So you could have ended right there. But the pasuk ends, no, v'yamin v'ashem Moshe Avdo. So most people answer, well, you don't want to quote a half a pasuk. But the immediately previous pasuk that was quoted in that very same paragraph, which says v'yom ha'char tzumim, el paro, etzba elokim hi, is also a half a pasuk. So therefore, there's obviously no need to quote a pasuk shalem in the Haggadah. We don't have such a rule in the Haggadah. So I thought that maybe the reason why we have that in the Haggadah is in order to fulfill this principle of chamalamari v'tabi l'shikuse, that in order for us, yes, it's true, our hakaras hatov is only ultimately to lead to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. He took us out of Kvod Riyasmo. If we really want to be able to express hakaras hatov properly to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, we have to also, at least incidentally, Moshe Abdo, even to the Abodim, we have to incidentally pay a certain amount of hakaras hatov to the Shliach as well. So therefore, for that reason, we have to mention Moshe Ben only once. You say, oh, the Rambam doesn't happen in his Haggadah. The Rambam also, in Hilchos Kamei Samatzah, says when the Chacham, Ben Chacham asks, I want a more fuller exposition about everything that happens, so you tell him all the wonderful things that Moshe Rabbeinu did. So the Rambam also includes Moshe Rabbeinu as well. And it has to, even though incidental, not in the actual text, but incidentally he includes him as well. So that's the idea that we should all have Karas HaTovis. We enter into Pesach. I would say have a Karas HaTov, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Karas HaTov to all the Shluchim of Kodesh Baruch Hu. To all of the Rabbanim of the Yeshiva, to the Rosh Shekolel, to Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Willig, to the Menalim of the Yeshiva, to everybody, you know, who enables us to be able to learn Torah and to come closer to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And I want to take this opportunity as well to give my personal hakaras hatov to Rabbi Rosenzweig Shlita for enabling me to give a chabura in the Kol Elyona every single year. Thank you.
Does everybody want it or not?